In our study of the book of Joshua, Joshua, of course, is the military leader who would lead the children of Israel into the promised land. God commissioned him in Joshua chapter 1, giving him instructions in verse 4. It says, from this wilderness and this Lebanon, even unto the great river, the river Euphrates, all the land of the Hittites, and unto the great sea, toward the going down of the sun, shall be your border. In verse 6, he said, be strong and of good courage, for thou shalt cause this people to inherit the land, which I swear unto their fathers to give them. That expression, which I swear to give unto their fathers, we've seen that before. And we're going to continue to see that. As we saw Moses brought to the border of the land from Mount Nebo, privileged to see the land, and this was the land that was promised unto the fathers, unto Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Now Joshua is to bring the people in. We see that the first thing to be accomplished in going into the land is to cross over the Jordan River. We talked about that in Joshua chapter 3 and Joshua chapter 4, how that the waters of the Jordan would be held back so that the people of Israel could cross over on dry ground. I especially want you to try to remember the paragraph in chapter 4, verses 19 through 24, as God is showing something to these children, those who were born in the wilderness, that their parents who had crossed over the Red Sea as young people have seen demonstrated the power of God. And now this new generation needs to see demonstrated the power of God. And they will see it, and did, as they crossed over the Jordan River. Look, if you will, at specifically verse 22. It says, then ye shall let your children know, saying, Israel came over this Jordan on dry land. For Jehovah your God dried up the waters of the Jordan from before you until ye were passed over, as Jehovah your God did to the Red Sea, which he dried up from before us until we were passed over, that all the peoples of the earth may know the hand of Jehovah, that it is mighty, that ye may fear Jehovah your God forever. These who are parents say, here's what God did, and we saw this, and here's what you saw. And the purpose of that is that all the peoples of the earth may know the power of God. Now, in our study last time, as we discussed the coming into the land, the crossing over of the Jordan, we saw this pillar of stones erected. We noted that the first city to be conquered was... what city, David? Yes, the city of Jericho. They came across the Jordan River. The first city of the conquest was the city of Jericho. How did they take the city, John? All right, they marched around it once each day. Okay, and the priest blew on the trumpets, and the walls fell down flat, and every man went up straightway before him. David? That's correct. That's right. That's right. And the walls fell down, and every man went up straightway into the city. When they came to the city of Ai, Rick, when they came to the city of Ai, what happened? Pardon me? Okay. Joey? Ai. What happened at Ai? Joshua 7. Chris? Alright. Alright, now why were they defeated? Was it because of their overconfidence? All right, that's right. Who took something? Juan? Yeah, you almost said it. Jenny? Achan. He took something. What did he take, Randy? All right, the Babylonian mantle, which was a garment. What else did he take, Ken? He did. He did. He took some silver and some gold, and where did he hide it? All right, in the midst of his tent. And what happened to him? Donna? What happened to him? He was stoned to death. Just Achan? He and his family were stoned. All of his possessions were stoned. And then they were burned. And then they were stoned some more, so that they raised up over him a great heap of stones, which remains. And it was called the Valley of Achor, it tells us, unto this day. Now, as we closed our study last time, I ask you to look at that little expression, Valley of Achor. It occurs one other time in Old Testament history. And Randy, it occurs in the book of Hosea. Hosea. Let's turn to Hosea. Now, I need some background information about Hosea. Richard, tell me about what period of time Hosea is prophesying in. Okay, right in that time frame. We note that the northern kingdom has been worshiping idols. And Hosea pronounces a threat. I want you to look at it in Hosea chapter 2 in verse 14 and 15. Randy, would you read that for me, please? Yes, please. All right, this passage is very important, especially to our study this morning, as we look at the history of the northern kingdom, the prophecy of their captivity. They would be taken to the Valley of Achor, and it would be given as a door of hope. But when we read originally about the Valley of Achor, that's where Achan and all of his family were stoned. How is it that such a terrible place could be used in this context and described in any respect good? All right. Well, we know that the prophecy of Hosea and other prophets during this time frame is that you're going to be taken into captivity because of your idolatry. This is a bad thing. We know that Samaria was destroyed in about 722 B.C. as the king of the Assyrian Empire came down and stomped the northern 10 tribes and took captives. But was the period of captivity intended to be permanent? What was Israel to learn in captivity? Learn to obey God. That's right. They're worshiping idols, and they needed to learn to obey God. David? Yes. Well, in a similar way, yes. The accursed thing was those possessions of value in the city of Jericho. They would be accursed if they took them. They were to be placed into the treasury of the Lord. The American Standard Translation uses the word devoted thing. They were to be devoted to God. It would be a curse to those who took them, but it was to be devoted to God. And when they took them, when Achan took them, then of course that was a curse to him and to his family. And what we want to note here is that when Achan was taken to the place called the Valley of Achor, and he was stoned, everything that he had destroyed, what did Israel learn from that episode? Obedience. What happened then when they went up against the city of Ai? They were victorious. Now, you see, sometimes lessons have to be learned the hard way, don't they? We become so stubborn, so obstinate sometimes, that the most valuable lessons are learned down in the valley of Achor. And wasn't that true with Israel during the time of Achan? They learned what it is to be in the valley of defeat. Wasn't that what it meant in Hosea chapter 2 when Hosea threatens the valley of Achor? They would be taken into Assyrian captivity. And when that captivity then would drift over into the Babylonian captivity, which lasted for 70 long years, when Israel was in this captivity, what did they learn? That they did not learn in freedom. Reliance upon God. You see, we can't live independent of God. Israel learned that during the time of the conquest, and they learned it in the valley of Achor as they were commanded to stone Achan to death. And they learned it in captivity when the Assyrians took the northern tribes and then the Babylonians took the southern tribes of Benjamin and Judah. Now, with Jericho, Ai, and then eventually Bethel destroyed, we find that Israel's path into the central portion of the land of Palestine was now made open. No, I don't think so. I think he's making a reference here to the people being taken into captivity, and that the captivity would be offered to them as hope. They would have an opportunity to repent. Yeah. I don't think so. I'd have to look at the map of their travels back into Jerusalem, but I don't necessarily think so. We might look at that and see. From Babylon, yeah. Babylon, remember, was up north. So they would... Yeah. The map is a map of their return. Okay. You might look further over after the period of the kings, the period of the captivities, and we'll look at some maps there of their restoration and study that in some detail and see if indeed they came back through there. That's I'd have to note that. Yeah. Well, I don't think necessarily he's talking about the location as much as he is the period of destitution, the period of captivity. Ai represented something very negative to these people. Defeat, yes. And Assyrian captivity was something very negative to these people. And this is given the name, the Valley of Achor, as a door of hope. My understanding of that is during times that are really bad for us, we sometimes learn valuable lessons. And that's why this place where Achan was stoned was called the Valley of Achor. And the reference then back from Hosea to this, referencing their captivity, it would be the Valley of Achor, not a literal place necessarily, but to refer to the tragedy of what happened and the value of the lessons learned, what I call down in the valley of defeat and despair. Yes, Bruce, and then David. They would learn that in captivity. Okay? Any other questions? Yes, David, I'm sorry. This is a different generation. The one generation came in because of their sin. My question is, I guess they were told about what their parents did, and they knew the results when they were out in the wilderness. And then here we are again in the There were many hard lessons.
Yes.
And I think one of the most impressive things that we see regarding the sin that Achan committed, we might compartmentalize or individualize what he did, but we see that the effect of his sin was far-reaching. Sometimes our sin don't just affect us. Yes. Yes. That's right. And you've got the 36 people that died in the battle there at Ai. And then the embarrassment of the people of God because they were driven from Ai. Okay? But now that that's corrected, we've got free course into the central country of the land of Palestine. Now, this map displays that they went to the twin peaks of Gerizim and Ebal, and you'll see those located on this map as they come into, let me get my bearings, here we go, into Jericho. Here's Ai and Bethel, and now we see the army heading to this area to conquer the northern portion of the land. Any questions or comments just here? By the way, there's Mount Ebal and Mount Gerizim. Yes, Richard? Yes.
Because that mountain range comes up like that, any weather that comes off the Mediterranean hits those mountains and drops its rain on the western side. The western side is quite fertile and completely different from the eastern side. The eastern side is just rocks and sand. So down there at Jericho, even where Jericho was, it was not a lush area until you got further down into the Jordan River.
Right. Of course, when you get onto the central country here, now let me get my bearings again. Jerusalem stands close to it. I can't see it. Jerusalem is here, and we've studied the elevation of that of about 2,500 feet elevation. So, yes, you're right. You're getting into the central hill country where they're seeing the beauty of the land. Exactly right. By the way, this is the place you recall when Abraham came into the land, and he began to set up camp in the land that was at Shechem. And here's Genesis 12, where we see God speaking these promises to him regarding him becoming a great nation of people, giving him the land, and then in thy seed shall all families of the earth be blessed. So they're coming into the very land that God spoke of when he was speaking to Abraham, Genesis 12, yes. Yes.
On the coast, there's another one that goes up the central plain area.
Way of Shur.
And there's one that goes up the King's, or whatever.
King's Highway.
That's up on Mesa up above. There were no routes that came down to the Jordan River Valley. It was too circuitous. It was either so completely full of trees that you couldn't get through, or just abject desert.
One of the things, too, that we've noted is that there were, along places like up here and perhaps even along here, before these rivers begin to run in and so forth, but during the drier season, you might be able to ford the river. But this was not during the dry season, as we've noted in Joshua chapter 3 and 4, this is during the season of the harvest or the rainy season. So it was not a place that would be easily travel. Exactly. Good. You did good on these trade routes. The way of the sea, the way of Shur, and the over here, the King's Highway. All right, good. Very good. All right, in Joshua chapter 9, look at verse 3. Joshua chapter 9, verse 3. Perhaps verses 1 and 2 would set the stage for us pretty good, but you'll note in verse 1 it says, "It came to pass when all the kings that were beyond the Jordan in the hill country and in the lowland and all the shore of the great sea in front of Lebanon, the Hittite and the Amorite and the Canaanite and the Perizzite and the Hivite and the Jebusite heard thereof, that they gathered themselves together to fight with Joshua and with Israel with one accord." Let me go back to this map once more. Do you see the areas that we're talking about? When he identifies the area beyond the Jordan, in the hill country, in the lowland, and then you travel over this way into the area, it says, the shore of the great sea, in front of Lebanon. Here are the Lebanon Mountains up here. The land of the Hittite, the Amorite, the Canaanite, the Perizzite, the Hivite, and the Jebusite. All of those who were the inhabitants of this land. Now keep in mind that this is the land that God described unto Abraham in Genesis 15. Remember? The very inhabitants are described there in Genesis 15. When they heard about Joshua, how that he's crossed over the Jordan and taken the city of Jericho, taken the city of Ai, they assemble themselves against him, to fight against him. In chapter 9, verse 3, it says, "But when the inhabitants of Gibeon heard that," or what Joshua had done unto Jericho and to Ai, "they also did work wilily." Randy, what does the American Standard say? Verse 3. 4. Craftily. What's that mean? Wilily. Okay. Well, what they did is they were very deceitful. Why were they deceitful? What did they do that was so deceitful? Linda, help me out here. Yeah, this is really bad. We're in destitute circumstances here. Help us out. So they want to make a covenant. Look, if you will, at verse 16. It says, "And it came to pass at the end of 3 days, after they had made a covenant with them, that they heard that they were their neighbors and that they dwelt among them." Look at our map again. Where's Gibeon? Right here. You see where it is? They've conquered Jericho, they've conquered Ai, and they've conquered Bethel, and they're on their way, and the Gibeonites come as if to say, "We are way away from here. We've traveled this long distance." As Linda said, look at our clothes, they're worn out, holes and everything. Our bread is all old and moldy, and don't hurt us. Be at peace with us. And so what was it that Joshua did? He was at peace with them. He made a covenant with them. But wait just a minute. Turn back, if you will, to Deuteronomy chapter 7. Deuteronomy chapter 7. Beginning at verse 1. Juan, mind to read for me, please? Beginning at verse 1 of chapter 7, would you read for me verse 1 and 2? Do what to them? destroy them. Don't do what? Don't make a covenant. Now, what is it Joshua just did? He made a covenant. You think there's going to be some problems from that? Well, you know there are. Reading beginning again at verse 16 of chapter 9, Joshua. It came to pass at the end of 3 days, after they had made a covenant with them, that they heard that they were their neighbors and that they dwelt among them. And the children of Israel journeyed and came unto their cities on the third day. Now, their cities were Gibeon and Chiriphath and Beeroth and Kirith-Jearim. And the children of Israel smote them not, because the princes of the congregation had sworn unto them by Jehovah, the God of Israel, and all the congregation murmured against the princes. But all the princes said unto the congregation, "We have sworn unto them by Jehovah, the God of Israel, now therefore we may not touch them. This we will do to them, and let them live, lest wrath be upon us because of the oath which we swear unto them." And the princes said unto them, "Let them live, so they may become hewers of wood and drawers of water unto all the congregation, as the princes had spoken unto them." What did they make out of them? They made slaves or servants out of them. But they didn't kill them. What did God say do to them? Kill them. Joey? I believe you are. But point in case, or case in point just there, we may unintentionally disobey the commandments of God, and the consequences follow just the same. Yes, Juan? Ah. That's right, verse 14. You'd like to think. Yeah. All he had to do was ask. That's right. Randy and then Linda. Okay. Okay. Yeah. All I can say in answer to that is perhaps. I don't know who these men were as far as their leaders were concerned. Yeah. 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 Well, we do know that they had appointed certain men among them. We saw that during the days of Moses to be responsible for certain decisions. But we have folks here that have made decisions that were contrary to what God told them. Yeah. All right. Linda? Lots of lessons to be learned in that. Ask first instead of just go ahead. Be sure you're right, as the old brother told me when I first started preaching. Be sure you're right and then proceed. And they didn't know. And they did the very thing God told them not to do. That's right. Yes, Ken? Yeah, they conquer the land, but this does come back to haunt them. I'm not exactly sure, and I can't recall the passage where that is. Ken, some of you may help me with that and locate the passage, but it does come back to haunt them, that they had made covenants with the people. In fact, I think if memory serves me correctly, it comes back to haunt them more than once, but I can't remember where it is. We'll look for that as we continue to study. Yes. And they did indeed. They did indeed. Yes.
There's a great point for us here. Back to Juan's point, and Juan's point was a great point, and that, they had an opportunity to check with God first, so to speak. In this case, God would have said, no, they're lying to you. They're actually local. And you were told I'm in the covenant. Back to that point, as part of applying that to us today, we as the Lord's church today should never rush into
valuable lesson, but what we sometimes wind up doing is we start or initiate a practice, and then when it's called into question, then we go to the Scriptures and try to justify it. And we've got our order wrong. You recall when they came to the Red Sea and the people murmured and complained, Moses said, stand still and behold the salvation of the Lord. If you don't know what to do, that's not the time just to proceed. It's time to stop. Find out what to do, and then proceed. Yeah. And they didn't do that. Okay, Randy? Oh, yes. Yes, and that's exactly what happened here in verse 22. Joshua called for them of chapter 9, and he spake unto them, saying, wherefore have ye beguiled us, saying, we are very far from you, when ye dwell among us? Why did you do that? Well, we could raise the question to Joshua and these leaders, why didn't you find out before you signed the covenant? Yeah. Yeah. Questions? All right. Let's move on just a little bit. They did indeed make a treaty of peace with them, and Joshua and the Israelites, as Juan has pointed out, neglected to seek God's advice in the matter, and of course the consequences ensue. In chapter 10, look if you will, beginning at verse 1. It says, now it came to pass when Adoni Zedek, king of Jerusalem, heard how Joshua had taken Ai and had utterly destroyed it, as he had done to Jericho and her king, so he had done to Ai and her king, and how the inhabitants of Gibeon had made peace with Israel and were among them, and that they feared greatly because Gibeon was a great city, as one of the royal cities, and because it was greater than Ai. And all the men thereof were mighty. Wherefore, Adoni Zedek, king of Jerusalem, sent unto Hoham, king of Hebron, and unto Piram, king of Jarmuth, and unto Japhia, king of Lachish, and unto Debri, king of Eglon, saying, come up unto me and help me, and let us smite Gibeon, for it hath made peace with Joshua and with the children of Israel. Now look, if you will, there at verse 5, as now we've got war taking place between the kings of the Amorites and so forth against the Gibeonites. Now what is it that Joshua has obligated himself to do? To protect the Gibeonites. Here are those who are in the lands. He was to make no alliances with them, make no covenants with them, but he did. And now he's obligated when the inhabitants of the land come up against the Gibeonites to come to their rescue, to defend them. Now he has to use his army to save them. And of course, you'll note in verse 6, they say, you know, we've made a covenant with you. Come up and help us. You see that? Come up and help us. And what did God do? Joshua, in verse 7, went up from Gilgal, he and all the people of war with him, and the mighty men of valor. And Jehovah said unto Joshua, fear them not, for I have delivered them into thy hand, and there shall not a man of them stand before thee. Joshua, therefore, came up upon them suddenly, for he went up from Gilgal all the night, and Jehovah discomfited them before Israel, and slew them with a great slaughter. How did he slay them? Hailstones. That's right. Hailstones. God rained hailstones upon them. Pardon me. And killed those who have traveled from these other places to make war against the city of Gibeon. All right, any questions or comments just here? When you look in the 12th verse and following, well, let me catch up with my slides here. Hailstones, here we go. Verse 12, it says, then spake Joshua to Jehovah in the day when Jehovah delivered up the Amorites before the children of Israel. And he said in the sight of Israel, sun, stand thou still upon Gibeon, and thou moon in the valley of Aalon. And the sun stood still, and the moon stayed, until the nation had avenged themselves of their enemies. Now, let's pause right there. What did God do so that Israel could conquer all these kings of these cities that marched against the city of Gibeon? Made the day longer. All right. The sun stopped for a day. The sun and the moon stood still so that these armies could be defeated. Ever been a day like that since? No? Ever been one like that before? Randy?
It's really impressive.
Uh-huh.
But it's really no more impressive than all the other miracles.
It's true. That's right.
He made sure when the battle was over that they knew that he won it for
them. All right. That's right. And what did Joshua do with the kings of these cities? Killed them. How did he kill them? You remember? All right. Locked them into a cave and then brought them out and hung them. Verse 26. He hung them. Okay. And then as you look at the rest of the chapter, chapter 10, we see the conquering of the various cities that were left in this portion of the land. All right, you see that? You'll note the verse 28, verse 29, verse 31, Lachish, verse 33, Gezer, verse 34, Eglon, verse 36, Hebron, verse 38, Debris. And then in verse 40 beginning, it says, so Joshua smote all the land, the hill country, and the south, and the lowland, and the slopes, and all their kings, and left none remaining. But he utterly destroyed all that breathed, as Jehovah, the God of Israel, commanded. And Joshua smote them from Kadesh Barnea even unto Gaza, and all the country of Goshen unto Gibeon. And all these kings and their land did Joshua take at one time, because Jehovah, the God of Israel, fought for Israel. And Joshua returned, and all Israel with him, unto the camp to Gilgal. Now, friend, wasn't that exactly what Joshua and Caleb said that God would do 38 years before? Yeah, God will fight our battles. These people, their defenses are taken from them. God will fight our battles. And they didn't believe them. Now we're seeing that all come to pass as Joshua leads them in the conquering of this land. Now look, if you will, at Joshua chapter 11. Joshua chapter 11. Randy, I need a reader, please, again. Verses 1 through 5. All right, look, if you will, at the location of some of these places. We've got the armies from the northern third portion of the land coming together to fight against Joshua and his army over here at Merom. Now, what does God assure them of? Verse 6. All right, it's all going to be over tomorrow. Now, read for me verse 15, please.
Just as the Lord had commanded Moses, his servant, so Moses commanded Joshua, and so Joshua did. He left nothing undone of all that the Lord had commanded Moses.
All right, and then what happened, as a good friend of mine said when we were studying some of these things, then what happened? When Joshua led them to conquer these kings, we find that the land is theirs. Now, I would call your attention to this whole chapter, but specifically, if you would please, look at verse 22 through 23. Randy, please.
There were no Anakim left in the land of the sons of Israel, only in Gaza, in Gath, and in Ashdod, son of David. So Joshua took the whole land according to all that the Lord had spoken to Moses. Joshua gave it for an inheritance to Israel according to their divisions by their tribes.
All right, when you look at verse 23, hold your finger there. Verse 23, Joshua took the whole land according to that which Jehovah had spake unto Moses. And Joshua gave it for an inheritance unto Israel according to their tribes. The land had rest. When God made the promise initially back over in Joshua chapter 1, verses 2 through 6 to Joshua, what was it that Joshua was to do? Joshua 1, verses 2 through 6. Jenny? Just summarize that for me. What was Joshua to do? To conquer everybody. To deliver the land that God had promised unto the fathers. Deliver it unto the children of Israel. Now, in Joshua chapter 11, verse 23, has he done that? Yes. The land is conquered. Now, we might look at the rest of the book of Joshua and say the rest of the book of Joshua is the division of the land among the tribes. And that's right. That's what that's all about. The division of the land among the tribes. And so that's what I want you to study for our next study. Chapter 13, actually, through chapter 24 of the book of Joshua. Okay? Chapter 13 through chapter 24. Chapter 12 is more or less a summary of the engagements of Joshua in the conquering of the land. But lesson number 17 in your lesson book, you read that. It's the discussion of Joshua 13 through 24, the division of the land among the tribes of the children of Israel. Now, we talk about the tribes of the children of Israel. Where do these names come from? Pardon me? All right, Israel, their father. We note, of course, that Joseph, one of the sons of Israel, or Jacob, had two children, Ephraim and Manasseh. Now, we're going to talk about why these were given, yes, a portion of the land, and we're going to talk about the son Levi. What portion of the land did Levi receive? All right, cities. He received cities. He didn't receive a portion such as these that are outlined on the map. Received cities. Now, the significance of the cities, among those, six of the cities were called cities of refuge. You'll read about that in Joshua chapter 20. Why is it so important that we note that there were six cities of refuge? We're going to talk about that in detail next time as we talk about the conquering of all of the land. They had been promised something. David? Not that I recall. I'll have to look for that. It doesn't ring a bell to me. It may be. I just don't remember. Yeah. Yeah. Well, these cities were given to the Levites for a special reason. We'll talk about the cities of refuge. They were cities that men could flee to if they had committed a crime, or murder in particular, unwittingly. In other words, they accidentally killed somebody. Well, they could go to these cities and find refuge. But we're going to note that there were three that were given on one side of the Jordan, contingent upon the conquering of all of the land. And if they conquered all of the land, then there would be three on the other side of the Jordan. And we're going to read in the text that there are six cities of refuge named. Therefore, what does it tell us? They conquered all the land. Now, that's very important. One argument that can be used to show that they conquered all the land. Plus, we're going to talk about Joshua 21 and Joshua 23, where Joshua said, "We conquered all the land," which he promised unto their fathers. Said it twice. Okay? So that's the assignment for next time.